right, so section two is on the definition of metaphysics. That's probably all we're going to get done today. So we may have to take some more of this, the first part of the next part. So next, then, the presupposition of what Lonergan's proposing has to be worked out, namely, that cognitional theory really does exercise this kind of fundamental influence. Is he right? There are a lot of Thomists that disagreed with it when he wrote this book, and they thought, you know, that he's an idealist. If you start with cognitional theory, you're going to end up as Kant, and you can't get away from it. So is he right that cognitional theory really does have this kind of influence on the development of metaphysics, and later on of an ethics and of theology? So the first of these derivative philosophic disciplines is metaphysics, the science that sets forth the general nature of the goal of knowledge, the general nature of the universal proportionate being. Proportionate being will be explained in a moment. The only question to be settled in metaphysics is the general nature of the goal of knowledge. For all questions of detail have to be met by the sciences and by common sense. If the notion of being as a structured desire to know underlies, penetrates, goes beyond all other notions, if its structure determines an objective, namely being, as whatever can be intelligently grasped and reasonably affirmed, then there must be a science of that objective that can be heuristically specified, that would underlie, penetrate, transform, and unite all other departments of knowledge, so that the world no longer does have to lie in pieces before us. That the science can begin to bring it together again on the basis of a full acceptance of the possibility of questions and answers. That science, as he conceives it, is metaphysics, or that's the way in which he conceives metaphysics. What do I know when I do that? This third question here. Being. But is there more about this objective that can be specified? Specification will still be heuristic. It will be at a second renewal, with the determination that arises from the procedures by which we move to the objective. But at any rate, we're now in the position of spelling out, as what he called in the early part of the book, the broad lines of all there is to be understood. Well, isn't this preposterous to spell out the broad lines of all there is to be understood? Where is there a science underlies, penetrates, transforms, and integrates all the others? What would have to happen for such a science to exist? Well, the notion of being that underlies, penetrates, and goes beyond all other notions would have to conceive and affirm correctly its own implications regarding what is to be known. The notion of being is an anticipation of an objective. The objective is whatever can be intelligently grasped and reasonably affirmed. So that notion certainly underlies, penetrates, goes beyond other notions. It does. Because whatever other notions I'm following, whatever other questions I'm asking, I'm looking for what can be intelligently grasped and reasonably affirmed. I don't want to find what I would only find and affirm if I was being stupid and silly. So I want to find what I'm going to find by being intelligent. So that notion does underlie, penetrate, go beyond all others, because it propels me forward. Being faithful to it will lead me to transform my knowing in different departments. So if I can work out explicitly the implications of the notion of being for what is to be known, I will have articulated or begun articulating at least an explicit metaphysics. So this means that the notion of being itself, the very inquiring spirit of the human being, of you and me, is a latent metaphysics of the human mind, latent, present and operative in all of us. As long as it is not grasped with clarity and precision, its efforts at transforming dialectic and transformative dialectic and integration are random, spotty, ad hoc, coincidental, haphazard, spasmodic, and that's what he means by problematic. But even as latent, as long as it is given free rein to operate, it underlies, penetrates, transforms, unifies all our knowing, making it into a science or department of knowledge that underlies, penetrates, transforms, unifies other departments is a matter of the latent metaphysics conceiving itself working out its implications and techniques, and affirming the conception, the implications, and the techniques. More fully, and there are three points here. Number one, the latent metaphysics. There is a latent metaphysics of the human mind in the notion of being, the dynamic anticipation of whatever can be intelligently grasped and reasonably affirmed. Page 416, empirical, intellectual, and rational consciousness are immanent and operative in all human knowing. From them spring both the various departments of knowledge. So physics is a product of empirical, intelligent, rational consciousness. Psychology is, common sense is, theology is. They all spring from empirical, intelligent, and rational consciousness. And the attempts that are made to reverse counterpositions and attain coherence and unity. But the common source of all knowledge is not grasped with sufficient clarity and precision in this latent stage. The dialectical principle of transformation is not a developed technique, and so on. The efforts are haphazard and spasmodic. Even as latent, this spontaneous metaphysics underlies, penetrates, transforms, and unifies other departments, but not from the ground of self-appropriation. Secondly, metaphysics becomes problematic when there is the felt need for a systematic effort for unification. The world lies in pieces before us and is begging to be put together again. Problematic metaphysics. When there's a desire for the unification of the sciences, a desire to overcome the fragmentation of knowing, a desire that students, college students, feel when they go from class of music theory to physics to mathematics to theology in one day. How does this all fit together? Okay, how do we overcome the fragmentation? How do we unify it? And finally, explicit metaphysics emerges when the latent metaphysics, again, succeeds in conceiving itself and working out its implications and affirming and so on. All right, here's the definition of explicit metaphysics at the very end of 19. Not an easy definition. Lonergan, in delivering the lectures on understanding and being, couldn't remember his own definition. In the book, you'll hear that next week. Explicit metaphysics is the conception, affirmation, and implementation of the integral heuristic structure of proportionate being. Okay, what in the world does that mean? Conceiving, affirming, and implementing the integral heuristic structure of proportionate being. Okay, break it down. Proportionate being is the first thing. What does he mean by proportionate being? Prescind from the question of world transcendence. Prescind from the question of whether there is a God. And you will know what proportionate being is. Proportionate being, theologically conceived, is creation. But in a philosophic standpoint, it is whatever can be known by the sciences and common sense. Whatever can be known by the kinds of knowing that we've talked about so far. Whatever can, in some way or other, come within ordinary presentations of sense and consciousness, even if it's by a highly refined scientific dial or lever or whatever, but you've got some kind of indication that where there can be there's some experience, sense experience that can be involved. Understanding and judgment. That's what is meant by proportioned being. If you want to think of it theologically, think of it as creation. There is no reason why, given the indefinite unfolding of the human race, we can't understand an awful lot about everything that is created. Because today we're getting all kinds of data on the planet Mars. All right, we don't ourselves see it directly, but we're seeing a lot about it now through photographs and so on. So it comes within the realm of proportionate being, experience, understanding, judgment. Metaphysics is not that knowledge. That knowledge is the knowledge of the sciences in the usual sense of the term and of common sense in the usual sense of the term. So metaphysics has nothing to do with the knowledge of Mars. That's science that knows that. And metaphysics can then take that and integrate it with a lot of other things. Science is methodically heuristic, and there's even a certain heuristic dialectic for directing common sense. We've seen a little bit of that so far. We'll see more of it later. But while the content of a future cognitional act is unknown, the general characteristic of the act itself not only can be known, but also can supply a premise that leads to the act. So a heuristic notion is the notion of an unknown content, and it's determined by anticipating the type of act through which the unknown would become known. A heuristic structure is an ordered set of heuristic notions, and an integral heuristic structure is the ordered set of all heuristic notions. So proportional being, now in the integral heuristic structure of proportional being would be the integration of all of the heuristic structures that are employed to understand proportional being. Up to this point in the book, we have seen classical and statistical heuristic structures. In chapter 15, there'll be the whole matter of the notion of development, and there'll be the presentation of a genetic heuristic structure. In chapter 17, there's the presentation of a dialectical heuristic structure. In method and theology, there's the presentation of a scholarly heuristic structure for studying history and the interpretation of texts. The five, at least, heuristic structures in Lonergan's writings, heuristic structures for understanding proportional being. The integral heuristic structure integrates all of these, and integrates and is open to integrating the future heuristic structures that will unfold as the human mind develops, as we come to know more things. All of these developed in the course of time. I was saying, just I thought of this when I was talking to Chris. Thomas Aquinas, who wrote probably the single most complete systematic work in theology of anybody in history, did not have classical heuristic structure. That emerged with Galileo, Newton, and so on. Statistical heuristic structure has emerged in the 20th century. Genetic heuristic structure in biology, psychology, and so on. Dialectical heuristic structure, the scholarly heuristic structure of scientific hermeneutics and critical history, you didn't have any. Okay, so his metaphysics, in many ways, is a lot simpler than the sort of thing that Lonergan's envisioning for, because he's envisioning something that would come about as we integrate the results of all of these heuristic structures. They all get integrated into a unified integral heuristic structure. So explicit metaphysics, then, is the integral heuristic structure that anticipates, this is about line 8 on page 6, the complete understanding of all phenomena. And as heuristic structures are developed, they're added to the set of anticipatory structures. So there will be new ones, undoubtedly there will be new ones, because there's a lot more. And we don't know how to get at it yet. And heuristic structure is precisely how do you get at it? So it has to unfold. As methods develop, metaphysics progresses by adding these discoveries to its account of the integral heuristic structure of the proportional being. Insight treats, as I just mentioned, four: classical, statistical, genetic, and dialectical. But explicit metaphysics is still not complete in that state, and he's not claiming that he's giving you any kind of anywhere near complete metaphysics here. Insight gives a fixed base and invariant, that's a mistake there, invariant pattern, opening upon all further developments of understanding. But the integral heuristic structure will continue to be assembled as long as there are new methods to be discovered understanding the data of the concrete universe of proportional being. And the one example is scholarly and methodology, which is not in here at all. It doesn't say anything about historical scholarship in this book. Integral heuristic structure is a limit notion. It's almost, you could say, it's an eschatological notion. We'll have it when we get there, when we get to God. Metaphysics will progressively fill out the notion of being by the addition not of content, that sciences add the content. Metaphysics will add ever more specific heuristic structures as these are developed in the course of the development of human knowledge. Most likely they will be completed. So the first thing then about this metaphysics is that it's not done. You may say, well, I like Aristotle's metaphysics or Aquinas. Well, I like it too, but it's not the end product. Explicit metaphysics will be progressive. Heuristic notions and structures are not discovered by some Platonic recall of a prior state of contemplative bliss. They result from the resourcefulness of human intelligence in operation. They're to be known only by an analysis of operations that have become familiar and are submitted to examination. So just as the other departments of knowledge advance by discovering new methods, so metaphysics advances by adding these discoveries to its account of the integralistic structure of proportion of being. So you've got, finally, the possibility of a developing metaphysics in that moment. Now, he will, and then we'll see in the next chapter, but from Aquinas, from Aristotle, you've got potency and form, and from Aquinas, you've got potency and form and act for both of them. But Aquinas' act is much fuller than Aristotle's act. So that's a permanent achievement in this integral heuristic structure. It's not the whole thing. Permanent achievement, which he brings forward in terms of his own understanding of what they meant and what they have to be understood as meaning. But we'll see that in the next chapter, beginning of chapter 14. So explicit metaphysics then will also be nuanced. It will be more established in some parts than in others. This is pretty firm, potency, form, and act. But there are a lot of other many, many things. There's a lot more to metaphysics even in Aristotle and Aquinas than potency, form, and act. It's factual. It treats not the merely possible nor the absolutely necessary, but in what in fact is, because that's what these heuristic structures are concerned with. What is? Classical statistics, right? Dialectical scholarly. Its relation to the sciences and common sense is complex. It doesn't discover or teach science. This may not seem to you to be a big issue, but when I had my initial course in epistemology at St. Louis University, metaphysics, the scientific knowing was all constructive. And it was only metaphysics that really gave you the content of the reading. That's not what he's talking about. Content comes from the sciences. Form is known by the sciences. Form is not known by metaphysics. Metaphysics knows that there is form. The forms are known by physics, by chemistry, by biology, by knowing the relations of things to one another. That's what gives you form. Metaphysics tells you there is form. But what it is what you know when you understand the data the sciences understand. So it's a major transformation of the common scholastic understanding of those terms, but one that I think is quite in keeping and in continuity with the best and the sources of scholasticism, namely Aristotle and Aquinas. So it doesn't discover or teach science, it doesn't develop or impart common sense, it doesn't know the formal intelligibilities of the universe of proportionate being independently of science and common sense. But as latent, it generates science and common sense, and as explicit, it takes over their results, works them into coherence, reverses their counterpositions, and knits them into a unit. It's relatively stable, not subject to revolutionary upheaval. He would say that if this is rooted in experience, understanding, judgment, then it's not going to be radically revised. If potency corresponds to experience, form to understanding, act, which they do as he unfolds them in the next chapter, then that's stable. That's a part of the integral heuristic structure. A science is open to revolutionary change in as much as it's possible. Think of Thomas Kuhn's work. Structure of scientific revolutions. Inasmuch as it's possible to reach a higher viewpoint and consequently to alter the content of its primitive terms and relations. But, this is again going back to the material and Gödel's theorem in the introduction, it's possible to reach a higher viewpoint only within the framework of inquiring and critical intelligence. And there is not, in human knowledge, any possible higher viewpoint that goes beyond that framework. Any higher viewpoint is going to be a product of inquiring intelligence reflecting reasonableness. It's going to be a product of experiencing, understanding, and judging. You can't go beyond that, you can't go back on it. So any possible higher viewpoint that goes beyond that framework itself and replaces intelligent inquiry and critical reflection by some surrogate is not possible. It really isn't possible. So the viewpoint of metaphysics is constituted by nothing less than inquiring intelligence and critical reflection. And moreover, a higher viewpoint can alter the content of primitive terms and relations only if that content is some determinate object of thought or affirmation. A merely heuristic notion is not open to revision. A merely heuristic notion is what I will understand when I have understood the data. It's both antecedent to the determinate account, subsequent to each, and the principle of the revision of each. Since metaphysics is the integral heuristic structure of the question of being, it is not open to revolutionary change. I'm taking quoting there, as you can see, a number of ellipses, but that's the point that he's making. And finally, metaphysics, explicit metaphysics, will regard being primarily as explained, but also insofar as descriptive relations must be identical with some explanatory relations that regard secondarily being as described, because the relations of things to us can also be regarded as relations of things to one another, if you get the point that I'm making there, that you can stand back from it and understand the relations of things to yourself in an explanatory way and not just a descriptive way. All right, can I pause for a moment and see if Rob?
The internal heuristic structure, this higher viewpoint is a constantly developing notion. There's always a possibility of attaining a higher viewpoint.
Yeah. But there is no higher viewpoint that is not reached by the operations of experience and understanding and judgment. That's the point. So there is an upper... Well, in chapter 17, it would be the upper blade of the scissors, okay? And it was the invariant upper context. That was the language that he used in the introduction. It was an invariant upper context of the operations of experience and understanding and judging. All higher viewpoints in any science emerge from the exercise of those operations. So there is a controlling or invariant higher context, upper context. Did I preempt your question?
I'm thinking of this in relation to what Coelho is saying about the universal viewpoint. So the universal viewpoint...
What is it with Ivo Coelho?
Yeah. That's a potential inherent within the integral heuristic structure. But it's an anticipation, it's not a...
That's right, it's an anticipation, it is. It's a potential totality. His very definition, we'll see it in chapter 17, the higher viewpoint is potential totality, genetically and dialectically related viewpoint. Potential. It will only be complete at the end of... And again, it's an eschatological notion. Okay.
Well, why proportionate being rather than just being?
Because he wants to prescind for the moment from the question of whether there's anything world transcendent, whether there's anything on which we do not have immediate data. We have no immediate data on God unless God gives them to us. If there is such a thing as grace, then God is giving us some immediate data by which we have some kind of knowledge of God. And Dave Donovan will bring that into it. But grace itself is created. There is created grace. So the supernatural virtues and sanctifying grace are created habits. But God, that's the only way in which God can come within our experience is by God doing it. Otherwise, we only get to God by causality from this universe to a creator. Some of those arguments are genuine, but Lonergan would maintain that no one can really see the point of the argument unless they're already influenced by grace. That's his position. So that's why he's prescinding now. He'll raise that question later. Transcendence. So the fact of the matter is that unless God has come into human history in some way, through revelation, through grace, Christians would maintain even through incarnation, there are no data on God. unless God gives them to us. And so there's the whole question of transcendent being. It's a further question that he's postponing until chapter 19. Now, full metaphysics would also be a natural theology, a philosophical theology, but at the moment he's limiting it to the metaphysics of proportion. God also, with God, you know, you've got form and act, but you don't have potency. Form and act are identical with God. Essence and existence are one and the same with God. Because God's essence is to be, but there's no potency there at all. So you don't have these three elements. Those three elements are the elements of proportion. Only form and act in God, and form and act are identical.
Modern philosophers continually try to debunk metaphysics, but somehow, you know, it always gets to the back door. You somehow have to deal with it. But with what Lonergan is proposing, I guess what I'm asking, maybe to understand better, is that, like, contemporary philosophers, what are their positions vis-a-vis to what Lonergan is proposing in metaphysics?
Well, you know, what you have to read them all and try to understand what do they mean by metaphysics, you know.
Mm.
You really do. I mean, he's meaning something that I don't think anybody else really thoroughly means it this way, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it includes something from the scholastic tradition, the best of it, the potency, form, act thing. But even what he's done with that, as I said in Theology and the Dialogues of History, it's a radical revisionary reading of potency, form, and act. To say that form is what is known by the sciences that understand things and their relations to one another, I mean, many of scholastic philosophers well into the 20th century would just say, no, that's not right. Form is what I know when I abstract an essence. Well, what the dickens is it to abstract an essence? Give me one instance of abstracting an essence. You know? Hold up our professor of epistemology, wonderful, but he took three blue cards, identical in size, and he had us abstract blue card, you know, from that. All that's doing is, you know how to use the words blue and card. You're not understanding anything else. Nothing. That's not form. It isn't form. Mm-hmm. But that's what they were saying was form. That's what they held. They actually said that's what Aristotle and Thomas meant by form. That's nonsense. This is much closer to what they really meant. But we are much better now equipped to approach the knowledge of form than they were, because of all the scientific development that has taken place since then. But, you know, his meaning of metaphysics, in contrast with most of the scholastic tradition, is he's taken a radical leap forward that a lot of them couldn't follow at all. And and then with respect to other modern philosophies, they were reacting against an older notion. What would they do with this? I don't know. We'd have to see what they would do. The people who write, there's a couple of dissertations now on Levinas and Lonergan, and they're really finding that a tremendous harmony between infinity in Levinas and the desire to know the world. And that they're not really opposed to each other. There's an openness there. Even though Lonergan's desire to know ends up in explicit metaphysics, which for Levinas is at best secondary to ethics, if not even less lower on the totem pole. But, you know, there might be more in common than there is.
Mm-hmm. Well, just thinking, one implication from the way Lonergan does metaphysics is, I mean, the present crisis of meaning,
yeah.
The fragmentary of there's meaninglessness.
The people,
yeah. So there seem to be
who have gotten into Lonergan, who have really been looking for a solution to that,
mm-hmm.
that's why they've latched onto it, because they find it there. It's a you know, I mean, there is an integration that comes from this.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't find it anywhere else. The world lies in pieces before us. We all have that experience. We know what that is. And is there any meaning anywhere? You know, and there are people who will read him because he leads to some kind of unification and integration of things. So yeah, you're right. But there is a tremendous criticism of metaphysics, and you know, Lonergan himself also said, I have no doubt that most of the old answers are wrong. I never did them. But the questions are real, and the questions have to be resolved. He said that at one point, their professor of metaphysics at became ill after the third class of the year and wasn't able to continue the course. And Lonergan said, well, I don't wish ill on him. I actually was lucky with that because it's one other thing that I didn't have to unlearn. He reacted very much against the conceptualism that he brought there. He thought he was a nominalist because he thought nominalism was the only alternative to conceptualism. And then he found Newman, and Newman's the one that got him into the dynamism of the mind.
Yeah.
And that's what pulled him out of nominalism and into some kind of original position. So, okay, it's 4:00. We'll take section 3 very briefly at the beginning next week, and then the first 5 sections of chapter 5. Thank you.